Welcome to Live, Let, Thrive, a podcast about the Airbnb life, the share economy, and everything in between. Here are your hosts, Micah and Steve.
Hello, hello, hello.
Welcome back to another exciting episode
of Live,
Let, Thrive.
What's up, Micah man?
I'm chilling, Stevie Stacks, on this beautiful Monday afternoon, I should say, man. How you doing?
Good, man. It is a beautiful Monday. We've been having some good weather lately. I like it a lot. And then got really cold yesterday, which is weird at this time of year in North Texas. So, but we're enjoying it right now before the heat comes. And speaking of bringing the heat, we're bringing the heat today, Micah. Just you and me.
Yes, sir. We got a lot of good stuff to talk about. A lot of good stuff.
It's always good in between a few eps of getting some good interviews with great interviews with great people to do a you and me up to see where we're at. You know, we're always trying to grow our business and stuff like that. And this, by the way, is episode 249 of your favorite short-term, midterm, long-term rental podcast in the world, coming at you from Arlington and Fort Worth, Texas.
Man, dude, episode 249, man. Let's dive into it, man. How's things been doing on the Argus rental side, man?
It's been growing and changing and morphosizing, and I don't know if that's a word, but it's been, you know, I mentioned it before on the show. So we had a goal, you know, to get to a certain amount of units, right? And let's just say we threw a number out there, 100. And we got like over 70, and then it got to the point where, like, you know, we're picking up shitty units just to hit a number, right? And so we started shedding some crappy units and some, you know, get clients that didn't fit with what we were trying to do. They were taking a lot of our time and not putting a lot of money in our pockets, kind of thing. So, yeah, exactly. So we started pulling the weeds out the garden, and now the bigger pumpkins are starting to get more love and starting to grow. And we've been growing. You know, we went all the way down to like 50 units, and now we're growing back, you know, 55. You're going to get to 60 pretty soon, but good units, ones that we want, and good, great clients and clients we want to work with.
That is the most important thing, man. If you get the good units, that's what you want, man. Cause I have one unit that I manage, man, and it's a good client and a damn good property, man. You can make a killing doing that, you know? You get paid every month guaranteed, you know what I mean? And that mortgage or arbitrage, that rent is hovering over your head, low barrier to entry, low operational cost for you. So I love that, man. But man, go ahead.
Just real quick. I mean, it does go into the pumpkin plan, that book you suggested. It's a great book. And let's say you're being more selective with what kind of unit you're picking up. And you even turn away people that say, you know, that market, we know that market, we're in that market, it's kind of saturated, you know, we can't really do something with that one. But you do wait for the great one to come along, right? Or, you know, it's going to be a good moneymaker, and that client's like, can you manage it for us? You know, we get a lot of clients from Sarah and them. And so, yeah, we look at the numbers, we got, you know, throw it through the Air DNA thing, and then say, okay, yeah, we could really, you know, form a good partnership here. And once, and the cool thing is, once you get like a unit that's successful and a client that's happy, they're going to preach from the mountaintop, you know, hey, this, they know what they're doing. This Argus Rentals, you know, they know what they're doing, and they're going to be referring you to friends of theirs, because friends of theirs are going to say, holy crap, you're making that much a month on this house or this condo or whatever it is. And plus you don't have to do any of the work. You got a team doing it for you. First of all, where do I find a place like that? Second of all, who are these people? Who is this team doing it for you? So you get more referrals, and we're getting a lot of referrals coming through. It just snowballs and compounds, man.
Yes, sir. You can't beat a referral, man. Word of mouth is powerful. Very powerful, man. And yeah, I'm happy you guys are really finding your niche. And then you're really taking off and following that niche and not getting off track, you know, hey, let's just pick up a unit just to have a unit, man. Cause I know what that is. It's like, ugh, I dealt with that in Houston, man. I had some units just to have some units, and they were poorly managed rat motel type crap going on. So I know what you mean. I definitely know what you mean. Mm-hmm.
So where is Airbnb at right now?
Man, we are, that's funny. It's funny you brought up the pumpkin plan. So we're getting ready to do a refi. We should be done in 30 days. We got quoted to 7.25. But after really looking at the property, we realized it wouldn't make a good midterm rental because that's kind of the direction we're going is midterm rentals. So what we decided to do is we're going to Section 8 it. I was going to sell it, but then actually the episode, I think it was two episodes ago, we talked to Precious and she like really hit me. She was like, yeah, you got to keep that house. You know, that neighborhood can, you know, increase over time. So I'm gonna go ahead and keep it. I'm gonna Section 8 it. I'm already got it listed with the housing authority and we're supposed to finish the refi. We just finished the rehab on it. So I just got to send out the final payment to the contractor tomorrow after we do the final walkthrough. So that's the direction we're going. So we're mainly focusing on midterm rentals. I'm not out of the short-term rental game, but midterm's the way to go. Cause like right now, I think we're about 80% midterm booked right now. We barely have any short terms. We're contracting, networking directly with temporary housing agencies, directly with adjusters, because we're starting to get mailbox money, man. Got to get getting away from that OTA money. So that's basically where we are, man. I'm loving the midterm rental game. My VA's been coming a straight up ass kicker at going and talking to these people and getting our properties out there. So we have one more unit that we need to rent out on midterm. And man, that midterm money, that's good money, man. I love it. And I, a couple of weeks ago, I was able to actually hang out with Al Williamson, the midterm rental legend and goat. So yeah, and he just gave some really good ideas, you know, about stuff and how to really grow your business. So that's kind of where we are, man.
Nice, man. And so, So much to touch on right there, what you just said. But could you, okay, I'm pretty sure our listeners know what Section 8 is. Could you go into what Section 8 is exactly for if they, you know, refresh them up a little on that?
So basically, it's public housing, right? So basically, someone who may not be able to afford, like, you know, they have a portion of their rent is paid by the government. And, you know, you receive. So normally, let me just use this property, for example. This property, is going to be the mortgage on is going to be 800. Normally I could rent this thing out for about 800, but in this area I can rent it on Section 8 for 1200 because it's a 3-bedroom, 2-bath. So I'll be cash flowing a little bit more and it's guaranteed money, right? So the government's going to pay a portion, then the tenant pays a portion. The one thing you do kind of with Section 8, make sure you're really in tune with your, the housing authority agent that comes out. I forgot the coordinator. Make sure you're really in tune with the coordinator. Make sure that your tenant notifies you if they ever lose Section 8 benefits, because my sister's in a situation where the tenant lost Section 8 benefits, but she didn't tell her, but because she was still paying the rent, you know, paid the rent on time. But yeah, that's basically what it is. So, and the good thing about it is you are helping a family who really needs the housing. So not mad about that at all.
Now what does happen, you know, when they do, let's just say one of your renters is Section 8 and they lose their benefits, that, and you said right now they didn't tell your sister right away, but so let's say they just we lost their benefits, we can't pay no rent no more. You just kick them out right away, or what happens?
No. I think I haven't went through the process yet. So I think the only thing is, because I think they're going to pay for it up to a year on the lease signing. So, I mean, you have to up to that year. But I mean, afterwards, if they say they can't pay and they've signed a lease, then I mean, eviction time, I would assume, if they've lost those benefits. But that's something I'm going to have to learn.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, because I bought a house. I mean, when we bought the townhome over there in Fort Worth, like I said, not the best townhome community. I mean, they keep it clean. They keep it nice. The lady there, she runs it real well. But it's just the area, you know, certain clientele. You know, the lower income, and that's nothing wrong with that. But I'm just saying, trying to paint a picture. And so the guy that had it before me, like I told the story before, I bought it from a mechanic at work, came in the tool crib, was talking about this, you know, problem house. And he was doing Section 8, you know, for a few tenants. And he said, he had good luck and bad luck. He told me both sides of the story. And with the good luck, he had this lady in there and had a couple kids, just single mom. She paid on time. She was a hard worker. You know, she just trying to get ahead and getting her education. And so it was who it's designed, you know, it's designed to help people, right? I guess it's not designed to be a crutch for the whole, your whole life or whatever you want to do, you know, politics aside. But she was actually really needed to, you know, she's a single mom doing it on her own, but she was really busting her hump and she was able to, you know, get a better place, jump out of his. And he was like, oh, no, please stay. You know, I'll even give you a better deal on the rent. And, but she just, she, you know, she brought herself up.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
Section 8 helped her. Okay. Now he said he had issues with renting it to, you know, you can screen people, right? Of course. But what happened, he's the times he had trouble when, like, let's say a female got in there with her kids or whatever. That's fine. The boyfriend is usually a piece of shit. And they arguing this and that, bringing drugs to the place, bringing alcohol, you know, bad people around. He said that's where he's gotten into the issues. It's not the one he screens. It's the guy she starts sneaking into the place because he ain't on the lease. And that's when he started getting into the most problems.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to definitely do your background research. Screening is really a part of it. Because honestly, hate to say it, but I mean, if there's a dude around, you probably don't need to be on Section 8 anyway. Right. I mean, that's two incomes, but just being real. I mean, not for real. I mean, seriously, it's two incomes. If there's a guy around, you should be, but yeah, that is, the boyfriend is usually the issue. I haven't gone through it yet. Luckily, it's in a community where I know a lot of people. So like my sister got her tenant from a friend that she knows. And she was like, oh, this person's looking. So it's kind of a smaller community. So hopefully, knock on wood, you're probably going to have to deal with problems. This is what they do. They come up, right? So I hopefully we do a good job of screening and get the best we can get out of there, man, for sure.
So I still got my first renters in my first rental property, you know, the one, you know, like house hacked, hopped house to house. So my very first house I bought, I still got the same renters since the day I moved out. It's crazy.
Wow.
Like going like 7 years they've been there, longer than I lived there. I wish I could put them on Section 8 somehow so they can get some of that government money, because they'll pay me, but they're usually late with it. You know what I'm saying? And they'll pay the late fees and stuff mostly. But I mean, I'll get the money eventually. It's just a pain in the, you know, it's a pain dealing with them. I wish I could throw them on Section 8 somehow.
Is it like a single mother?
Yeah, single mom.
Yeah, it happens. I know. Yeah,
she has grown up as kids that they all work too. I mean, they can make this rent. My rent's cheaper than, a lot of spots.
Did you have that house? Have you introduced it to her?
Introduce Section 8?
Yeah, like, hey, you think you're housing? Yeah. I mean, the next time the rent check comes through, be like, hey, you're a little late, man. You ever considered housing? I mean,
it's a little late. Hey, man, you never know. Maybe she's gone down that road and burned her bridges with housing. Who knows, man?
Never know. Yeah, that's true.
We could do a whole episode on Section 8. This is great. This would be a great topic. No, this episode, maybe not, but we'll do a little more research. You're going to actually be doing it. I'm actually in the talks of buying through owner financing this condo, 2-bedroom, 2-bath condo in the same complex where our townhome is. And it's coming with a Section 8 renter already attached to it. This old lady that's been there for like 11 years already, and she don't want to leave. But she getting that guaranteed money, that guaranteed government money, and it pays everything. So I'm in the talks of taking over that one. It does need work, and I don't want to kick her out. You know what I'm saying? I don't plan on doing that. If I'm getting the guaranteed Section 8 money, it's just a good maybe base hit. Maybe, you know, it's a good little something to have in your thing. I mean, it's like I said,
happy you brought up owner financing, because one of the reason I'm divesting from Texas is because I think the only way to really make money in Texas is you need to be doing seller finance deals and sub-2 deals, because interest rates are kicking ass right now and it does not mix well with Texas property tax. So that's a good play right there. That's a really good play to now, like
that. Yeah. Speaking on that, so, I mean, we got it to where we can get owner finance for 5 years with the guy, you know, for 3% interest rate. Mm-hmm. Now,
what's his interest rate right now?
Well, he's had it forever. I don't exactly know what his interest rate. He's paid off. He's paid off.
Owner finance the way then. Okay.
Yeah, he's paid off. He agreed to like 5 years, 3%. That way it gives us time to like when the interest rate to do improve, hopefully in the future, one day, who knows. then we could refinance out at a decent rate. You know what I'm saying? So
I don't know if rates are going down again.
In 5 years, they're not going to go down. You don't think so?
I don't know, but it's just not looking like it. Like, you seen Biden's new rule, housing rule, punishing people with good credit. Basically, your housing payment can go up if you have good credit. So to subsidize for people with bad credit that own homes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so I just don't see interest rates going down. They could. Remember, I'm not predicting the market. I don't know all that. I'm not smart enough to know all that. But it's just the moves they're making. It's like, why would you do that? It's like very reminiscent of the 07-08 crash. But so it's very interesting how that's going to go. But hopefully they do go down. But I mean, see, and that's one of the reasons why I said I was divesting out of Texas, because with the 7% interest rate that I'm getting, because I got quoted 7.25, just pretty high. I got quoted 7.25 with good credit. I couldn't do 7.25 in Texas with the property tax. But in the area I am, the property tax is $600 a year. I can do it, you know, and still make money, even on Section 8, you know. So, yeah, man, if you can get that good interest rate, hold it for a while, push it out as far as you can, 5, 10 years, whatever. You know, sell it at the end if you have to or whatever. You know, it's multiple ways to get out of it. But, you know, yeah, I just don't know, man. Interest rates are just crazy.
Now, that's one thing. So seller financing, mm-hmm. that means so I'm buying it. He's acting as the bank, right? He owns the house and he's acting as the bank. And then we have it in a contract. After 5 years, I refinance out of that. But do I technically own it? For that 5 years, do I technically own the house? How does that work? Do I own the...
Funny you ask, man. I just got through listening to a long pace Morby Bigger Pockets, and it was some of the best stuff I'd ever heard. Owner financing, I'm not sure if you go on the deed. I know sub two, you can go on the deed and you can't go on... You can or cannot go on the deed in sub two. I think it's... If you don't go on the deed in sub two, it's called the titles in limbo until you trigger something that puts the title in your name. Owner financing, I think you don't go on the deed. I have to look that one up because I have not done a deal like that. I'm not sure if you go on the deed or not. That's what I'm not sure about.
Okay. I need to check that out, because that would be cool. Because if I had, let's just say I had control of the property, right?
Yeah.
In this 5 year period, and all of a sudden the market recovered and all that, and I could sell it. You know, say I technically bought it from him for $90,000. I could sell it for $130,000. I could just boom, swap that little deed over to someone else, and then they'd be grabbing that owner finance deal. See, I don't know how any of this works. So I just,
you know what? Yeah, I don't think owner finance, it goes into your name, because this is something Pace just said. He goes, the reason why he likes the sub two is that it's deeded to him, so he can write it off on his taxes. He goes, if the property isn't deeded to you, you can't write it off on your taxes. I was like, oh, he can't take the depreciation. So that's why he rather, with the sub two, he rather, the deed comes to me, you keep the mortgage in your name. So yeah, it's interesting stuff. Like, that's the part I learned today. I'm like, oh, that's why you want the deed, so you can, you know, write it off on your taxes. I'm not sure, but I mean, we're both learning it. You know, once I have the Section 8 knowledge, you have the owner finance knowledge, man, we're going to come back on this subject.
For real. Subject. I like that subject. Yeah, yeah.
It's a lot of good, you know. One thing about, you know, I've been telling you, I've been getting into the midterm rental game. And man, some really good jewels that Al dropped on me. He goes, you know, Al, he barely has his places listed on Airbnb. He's like, don't really need to. You know, a lot of people who are in the midterm game, they don't even really use the platforms because of how they know how to manipulate the midterm rental game. So he was like, people want to do all this market research, midterm rentals. You know, the market research is already done. He goes, he sets up units that are in a that are in a radius of extended stays. I was like, dang. And he said, he goes to the extended stays, drives the parking lots, and he'll call the people that are there. Like, he'll call the you know, whatever's on the van, he'll call those numbers, call the HR department, and then he'll actually go inside of the extended stay Motel 6 or extended stay whatever, and he'll talk to them about their rates. Like, hey, I have three people coming to town, how much do you charge for rooms? And then he beats their rate. and then he provides more value than them and beats their rate and provides more value than them. I was like, dude, he was dropping gems last week in Fort Worth. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff and a lot of stuff that I've been trying to implement as well. But yeah, midterm rentals, insurance clients, that's where it's at, man. That is where it's at. And I learned a lot from them because the reason why platforms, you can't really get the true insurance client is because adjusters don't go to the platforms. A lot of adjusters, some will, some won't. Most of them, they just go straight to the housing coordinator, straight to CRS, straight to ALE, and then they let them do the housing. But if your goal is, if you can get in with the adjusters, I actually joined a Facebook group called the Claims Adjusters of America. I joined that group and I just started putting my property out there and a lot of people have been hitting me up. So yeah, especially in areas where you know something's going down, like there is a flood or anything, that's how you get a lot of them, but just staying in their ear. And that's a good way to, you know, stay on top of those midterm rentals, man. I'm loving the midterm rental space.
Nice, man. It's so funny. So we have multiple Grand Prairie properties. I love those. Well, one particular, it gets a lot of interest and it's kicking butt for us, man. It's over there in like South Grand Prairie, you know, towards Arlington and towards Mansfield. Yeah, that way. South. Yes, yeah, south. And so I get hit up on Zillow. Mm-hmm. And I've told you this before. I list my properties on Zillow.
Smart.
And yeah, and it's been paying off big time, dude. It's especially with the, you know, insurance claims adjusters, whatever, the CRS and all the other THD, all the other ones. So one day I got a message on Zillow, right, asking about that property, and then right away I got another message, and then so I kind of messaged them back. Yeah, give me a call, whatever. So I got a text right away from someone who messaged me on Zillow. And then I got another text, and then one of them called, and I was like, and he's like, yeah, I like this place for my client, you know. Is it going to be available? And this, hey, money talks, is always going to be available if it's money, right? little Airbnb fuckers out of there. Sorry, don't listen to me.
Nobody wants them in there.
Damn. So he's like, yeah, we can do. He's like, how much is it? Well, how much can y'all do? I got this and this going on. He's like, oh, we can do $5,000 a month. I was like, sounds pretty good. $5,000 a month, I can work with that. I said, hold on, you know, let me get you some details and this is stuff that you need, and give me some details about the people who are gonna rent it, blah blah blah. And then right away another person called and I'm like, damn, it was two people from the same, like I think they were both from CRS.
Mm-hmm.
But the other, I was like, oh, you must be talking about this family, blah blah blah. She goes, No, actually another family. Okay. So it was two different and she's like, well, who called you before me? I was like, well, a dude named Marcus. Oh, damn it. Marcus beat me to the house. I was like, don't worry, I got some other houses, man. So, oh, send me what you got. They thirsty.
CRS is cutthroat, man. Like that's the exact same thing happened to me. And the dude on the first dude, well, I had already rented a place to him. So he had already placed somebody with me. So I already knew who he was. Another girl, they called about it. The next day he calls about another property. He goes, hey, you got this one available? I said, yeah, man. I'm like, hey, yeah, but I'm talking to this girl because she called before. I'm like, man, and I'm working with her. He goes, hey, man, if you just assign this letter of intent that you agree to the to your terms, I'll go ahead and lock it in. Damn. I'm like, damn. I'm like, isn't she there in the office with you? He goes, yeah, but if nothing's in writing, he goes, if it ain't in writing, nothing's going on. So I was like, all right. So we went with that guy. And by the way, you should ask for $8,000.
Damn.
Yeah, $5,000 is Arkansas prices, man. Yeah, you should ask for 8 to 10, man. I was like, yeah, 5. You should ask for 8. Because what you do, if they need 8, you could have, they would have brought it down if they needed to. But yeah, you should ask for 8 grand. If I had Texas, and that's our 5 grand, that's like Arkansas stuff. Yeah, you should ask for like 8, 9. But yeah, next time ask for like 8, 9. And then they'll let you know if they can come down. But usually you don't want to throw the first number, but just throw something crazy and see what they say.
Mm.
Yeah, throw something crazy.
See, I heard that about North Dallas, that 8 to 10. I heard that. But I didn't know mid-cities was going to be like, you could get that much over mid-cities.
Insurance, man. They ain't paying for it. The insurance paying for it. Yeah, man. I'm getting five. If I'm getting five in Arkansas, you got to be able to get eight in Texas. Yeah, yeah. Plus, you have to realize, too, there's a limited. Okay. How is CRS reaching you?
Through Zillow and then, you know, by phone.
Okay.
Email too.
And you're, yeah, email and by phone. So, and plus you're fully furnished, right?
Oh, you have
a limited number of clientele because most people are sitting on Airbnb. So their clientele and scope is limited. So, you know, plus they can't do it through Airbnb because they have to mail you a check. They have to get all the property information, the email, the address and all that. So they can't go through Airbnb, right? So their clientele is very limited. Most people ain't doing, I mean, people listen to this podcast maybe do it, but most people ain't doing the outside marketing. So you have a huge advantage.
Hmm.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I mean, to me, five sounded like a damn good deal because let's say we arbitrage the place for $2,000 a month, right? Throw some utilities on there. We're looking at 2,500 or, you know, 2,600 if it's high. That's still a good payout to me. That's $2,500 off of
something that would arbitrage.
$8,000's better. Yeah, but that's North Dallas money, but I guess it's everywhere.
$5,000? $8,000? Nah, you can go up. I mean, it depends on what type of property you have, too. You know what I'm saying? I'm getting like little small 3-bed, 2-bath, 1,200 square feet, $5,000.
Mm.
You can go 3 beds, 2 baths, 2,000 square feet in Texas, even 1,500 square feet in Texas. I forgot. I got to get the hold of the insurance rates and what they can pay. There's a certain percentage of the house they can pay. But yeah, man, you can definitely get a lot higher.
One funny thing is one of those guys from the CRS or TH, one of them called, really liked one of our places, right? And he said, and the clients were supposed to go tour it. And they canceled the tour. They didn't show up. He hooked us up with he gave me their phone number, gave them my phone number. They reached out, or I reached out to them and said, okay, so-and-so said you're going to tour the house Sunday. So we're going to tour it Sunday. Anyway, something came up. I was like, hey, y'all still going to go by to tour it? You know, I hadn't heard from you. Oh, something came up. We can't tour it Sunday. And so, okay, let me know when you can tour it. You know, I held the day for you. And I told the dude, hey, they never showed up. He's like, oh, really? Let me see what happened. And then he's like, oh, they said the daughter had to go to the emergency room or something like that. I was like, okay. He's like, but he goes, you know, between you and me, I think they want to stay in that hotel. It's like, it's a family, right? Mm-hmm. And he said the insurance is paying for 3 hotel rooms for them. And because it's the size of the family, he goes, I think they kind of like it there and they like not having to do anything and they get their room cleaned every day and all this stuff, you know, except, but the insurance company told him, y'all need to find a house because we're not going to continue to pay for 3 hotel rooms for months until your house is ready. You know,
I don't think the insurance can make that decision though.
To keep.
Because. Well, yeah, because there has to be a certain policy amount they're paying. It's like, I'll give you an example. I had a friend whose house burned down. So when his house burnt down, he didn't go to a hotel. He went to his mom's house, but he drafted up a lease between him and his mom. And they were paying, you know, they were paying him every month. I don't know if that's insurance fraud. I didn't do it. He did it. But he drew up the lease with the mom. So then, you know, so the whole time he could stack cash and they could stack up a bunch of cash. You see what I'm saying?
Mm.
Yeah.
Now, did you ever mention on the show what happened to your dad's house?
Did I? Yeah, his house got hit by the tornado. And so, yeah, that's what we were going to do. I was going to have him, because it was in my LLC's name anyway. I was going to rent my house to him because I was telling him, hey, go ahead and just use one of my houses while it's available because they were kept getting hit up. So I only got one more left. And I was like, hey, if you can get your insurance to, you know, take over the payments or whatever, we can just do it that way. But he ended up staying in the house because it's like a split house. His side of the house is fine, but the other side's where the roof came off. So his side's dry, all the electrical works, he's good. But yeah, that's what we were going to do as well because his house got hit by a tornado. This is the same tornado I'm getting all the insurance clients from. People can do that. I've seen people, you know, I'll just live with my mom and y'all pay me for living over here, you know. But, you know, hey, people do what they do to the system. No judgment.
Yeah. It's your LLC written to him. So it's on no big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, so yeah, I got a lot of stuff. The art of the midterm. We talked about the midterm. You know, here's the thing. So I know you say you're not even, you know, worried too much about short-term rentals anymore. Well, Airbnb. You say you don't like Airbnb. Mm-hmm. And so doing the direct bookings and, you know, building your brand and getting direct bookings, short-term rental bookings, you're all for that.
Yeah, but most of mine aren't even short term when I go direct. But yeah, I'm for it, but I'd rather it be midterm.
Okay. So what I was trying to get at, it was, and you saw it happening the other day, it was about a week or so ago, that all these bookings started coming into people's direct booking platforms, but they were fraudulent. You saw that?
Mm-hmm.
Mike Brown got hit up. I think someone actually was able to get into Mike Brown's house. I don't know how that ended up, but Federico.
Yep, a shit PMP. You got a shit PMP. Your property management platform should handle that in the background. If it gets marked as fraudulent or no payment comes through, it should automatically be. Nothing should go out. That's the power of a PMP.
Okay. So that's, I mean, but that's the number one fear of people is like doing direct, because they're like, especially short-term rentals. They said, well, Airbnb gives me the protection, you know? So they don't want to even try to do direct bookings, short-term rental.
Saw that dude who just got banned and had $1 million set up. And he said, Airbnb just crashed my business. Protect what? No, but honestly, man, it's all about knowledge, man. I think Federico goes into it a lot. You need to be knowledgeable. But yeah, a good property management system or platform, they call it PMP platform, will do what you need to do. Like I use Hostfully and it takes care of all that for me. Like I don't have to worry about, it'll send you a notification. Hey, this is a fraudulent, you know, they can't get in, you know, but good thing is their email that they signed up with to get it goes directly into my MailChimp. So if they ever want to make a legitimate booking, they'll eventually do it. So we can eventually set that up. But yeah, you just have to have a right PMP system. There shouldn't be. I'd be interested to know what Mike Brown's using if they were able to get into his place. So yeah, they should be able to do that.
Because, so
go ahead.
Yeah. So speaking of the MailChimp. I want to touch on that too. What do you do for your email marketing?
We just do simple stuff. We email out, like right now, we just set up a new, since this whole insurance thing came about, we just set up a new list in our MailChimp to target directly to insurance clients, right? So we have an email list that goes out to them that gives them our availability. We have one property right now that they're really advertising hard on. And then we also do monthly emails, like for events, like Cinco de Mayo's coming up. We got an email going out for that. Valentine's Day, we set it up on a yearly basis to just go out on all major holidays. And like if we have certain availability, we'll send stuff out on that as well.
Now, have you got many hits on that yet?
Yeah, mostly repeats. We actually have 4 repeats in right now.
Nice.
Yeah. So it took a long ass time, but yeah, it's working. But I'd rather those 4 repeats than just an Airbnb guest. And the repeats stay a long time. They stay 2-4 months, you know. Some of them, they're work from home people, their houses are being rebuilt. It's a good clientele. And you can't beat that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, staying top of mind is very important. Yeah. Having email, being a human, you get hit up by email marketing campaigns, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny. And the ones that are most effective is places that I've been to that I really enjoyed myself. Let's say South Padre Island. And I'll get like some email marketing from some of these spots in South Padre. And of course, I'm not thinking all year, you know, I'm going to go. I got to go over there. I got to go this week. I got to go next month. But when I start thinking, I need to plan my Padre trip, first thing I'll go is to that one of those emails. I was like, let me see. You know, they were talking about some special, some deal. So it stays on top of the mind, you know. And a lot of people, I'm saying, they leave a lot of money on the table by not just reaching out to past guests that have been there before, you know.
Easy. That's easy money, man. Yeah, people just don't. And plus, if you're taking a lot of your reservations through Airbnb and you don't have like a StayFi in your house, which I tell people, get a StayFi if you can, it's hard for you to really build that brand with Airbnb. Because one of the problems with Airbnb is it lacks consistency. So you can give a guest a five-star review, not a five-star review, but a five-star experience. But if it wasn't like their last five-star experience, they can't connect with it. So that's why target avatar is very important. But even if you have your target avatar and your target avatar is only coming to you through Airbnb, it could still be an issue. It's a book, great book called The E-Myth Revisited. And he talks about businesses not having consistency. He goes, you can provide a great service, but if you're not consistent, there's nothing you can do. And you cannot build consistency through Airbnb because there's too many types of hosts. So that's a really good book if you guys are readers, or if you want to listen to it on Audible. E-Myth Revisited is damn good book, man. A lot of stuff I learned just being in the short-term rental space on that book. There's a lot of good stuff in there.
Now, here's some, because you've been doing this for a while, getting your virtual assistants to like harvest information, right? Mm-hmm. Or to let's just say hit up Furnish Finders, hit up Al, hit up what's the other ones? Travelers.
Call from Al today.
From Al?
Yeah. They called. She's been doing a good job. She goes in there every day, and she knows to get their information off of Al. And then
Owl. Okay, I thought you meant Al Williamson.
Al. Yeah, the listing platform, I guess you would call it. But yeah.
Okay, are you still the closer then?
No. The only reason the lady called me was because she awarded it to us, but it was the wrong property. So she only called me to verify that. But yeah, she can close the deal because I have everything set up in monday.com. Like, hey, this is how much we're going to charge. This is how much we charge insurance clients. And we have it set up like that.
Now, who's your VA from here or Philippines or something?
Philippines. The only thing is she's not on the phone, so everything's done through email. So if they do call, but if they call, they ask for her. They're like, hey, can I speak to Zyra? And I'm like, oh, that's my assistant. And then she'll just start talking to me. And that's what happened today.
Okay. So that's what I was getting at. The actual phone call is still you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. She's not just too strong in communication on the phone yet.
She can. I just haven't set up a phone system for it yet. That's the only thing, which I need to do eventually. Phone system.
But that's where I'm getting at. Cause my virtual assistant getting great at sending me all this information, right? And getting all this harvesting and done. But when it comes to phone calls, it's still me doing it, which I don't mind, but it's getting like, that's a lot of phone calls now, man. It's a lot of phone calls. And I'm like, you know, and my VA doesn't have the best communication over the phone skills, right? My current VA. But they great at harvesting and getting all this here. Call, this is people want to talk to you, call. But it's a lot of phone numbers. So I guess the next step would be, you know, actually hiring someone that is really good on the phones, right?
Yeah. So
it's funny how you learn these things. You learn in a waves, right? You know, the gurus will tell you, just do this, get you an assistant. No, it doesn't work like that. You figure out how to get all this juicy info and you get a big ball, big glob of this info. Okay, now what the fuck am I going to do with all this info? You know, it's no, for real. It's just like, yeah, I got all this stuff. Now what do I want to do with it? You got to filter and sort and run it through the funnel and sift it and then get to the best ones and then that are going to be the worth your time because you're making the phone calls. But then you have to figure out someone who's going to do that. You know, it's a process.
It's just a matter of, you know, you actually executing it, right? Because you're executing it. So now you're like, okay, I see the importance of having a VA that can get on the phone. One of the fans of the show, that's one thing she always preaches to me every time she talks to me. She goes, dude, if the VA can't speak over the phone, I'm not hired. Like that's just one of her rules because she wants to be over the phone, call. So, which is a good thing because there is power in that. You get a lot more hits if you're picking up the phone. So that is one thing I'm going to be working on soon. Maybe open phone or there's a couple of other ones I can use. So definitely on the radar.
Yeah, we got open phone right now.
How y'all? So y'all have it. Y'all just not.
Well, it's just our phone service we use. I mean, how do you use open? How would you use open phone?
Your VAs aren't using it?
No, they do. They like, okay. For the side that's dealing with the guests and stuff like that, for the short-term rental side, all that stuff, you know, dealing with clients, cleaners and all that stuff, they use open foam. But I'm talking about if I'm going to close a deal with somebody, you know, like an insurance company or this and that.
So you have the system, you just don't have the VA for it.
Right, right. We use the business line for dealing with all the ins and outs of running the short-term rental side. As far as, and I do have a dedicated number on, excuse me, on the for corporate, which is the side I run, you know.
Yeah.
And actually, I had two VAs running the corporate side, but one of them, she's really good. She's being promoted to the operations side. The other one I still have because I didn't need both of them because they're both harvesting all this information. That's fine, you know. But of course, I'm the ultimate bottleneck. So I have to sift through all this stuff. And we have our own phone line and stuff. But the VA I'm left with, the communication skill over the phone ain't there. But anyways, but it's fine. I mean, I'm closing deals still, you know, me. But I am going to need someone that's good at the phones. That's coming up.
Yeah. Yeah. Same here. I need to definitely, because this VA I have now, she is a marketing beast. Like marketing, she's off the chain. I haven't really tested her phone skills. She speaks really good English and whatnot, but I do want to see if I can get her on the phones and test that out for sure.
Cool. That covers the VA talk we were talking about.
Well, another thing I do want to tell people is you need to know, have your phone system down, like what you need them to do and what you need them to say. Maybe create some scripts because that's very important as well.
They love those scripts, man. That's what they want. They love the script because they come from the call centers and stuff over there, right? In the Philippines.
Yeah.
Yeah. They love their scripts. The thing is, you get thrown a curveball and they don't know how to answer it the best way. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing.
That's one of those pre-screening things, man. Like I want people who can think on their feet. I noticed with Filipino VAs, they're very good at on their feet. They're more or less. Okay, this is what I noticed from Filipino VA to an Indian VA. Indian VA is not good on their feet, but they can harvest information. So if you give them a script, if a curveball is thrown, they're just like, you know, with my Filipino VA, if a curveball is thrown, she can cipher through it. You know, she can Mac, you know, mouthpiece her way through it. You know, I'm serious. She can mouthpiece her way through it. The guy, he wasn't. I'm like, damn, man. So yeah, you do have to kind of, yeah, you got
to get. Well, to all of our Indian listeners out there, I apologize for what Micah just said.
The thing is, I talked to my Indian coworker and she said the same thing. She goes, yeah, it's not going to be like that. She said the same thing because when I was hiring an Indian VA, I actually talked to her. I was like, hey, what is the culture like? What's this? And she gave me like the full rundown. She goes, yeah, if you tell them to work 24 hours a day, they'll do it. I'm like, what? She goes, yeah, that's just the culture in which they do. She goes, that's just what they'll do. I'm like, oh, but actually talking to someone who's from the Philippines here will help you understand the culture there. Actually, that's why I lean on Fetty a lot. Like when I ask a lot of VA questions in our group chat, I know Fetty knows because he's traveled the world and he knew, like I was having a problem with one of the VAs. I'm like, man, she doesn't ask questions. And he was like, yeah, he goes, in their culture, if they ask questions, they feel like they don't know and they should know. They don't look at it as I'm asking a question so I can learn something. So that's why, yeah, Fetty knows a lot about that. And that's why I always, whenever I have questions about that, I'll ask him, he'll know. Fetty actually could make a book on like the cultural hirings of VAs because he knows it. I think, how many countries you say he's been to? Like
60?
Yeah. He's crazy. Very familiar with, you know, he said he'd done training in India, training in the Philippines. Like, damn, man. And shit, he just got back from Japan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Japan and Hawaii, long trip.
Yeah, and I was telling him, man, that's your strength right there, man.
Superpower, yeah.
Yeah.
One thing that, you know, I always tell you, I'm not a big fan of social media. Mm-hmm. I don't like wasting time on there too much. But the thing is, we're starting to build a pretty good funnel there. And the best part of it is I don't have to be on there for very much, for a minute a day, because our VAs are attacking the social media now and making posts, and they're interacting with people that are asking the DMs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Now, still, they'll get the information for me. And I'll make the phone call or text or whatever. But it's starting to build a nice Facebook and IG funnel from the social media. And plus, and the best part is I don't got to fucking be on there. So so I like that part of it the most. But how important is social media to your company?
Very important, man. One thing about social media is you do have to kind of understand where your target audience is. I need to clean up my Facebook because I noticed more of my target audience is on Facebook and not Instagram, because that's very important, is knowing where they are. I do get a lot of inboxes on Facebook more than Instagram, because Instagram's a younger crowd and our places are targeted for older families. So that is one thing that I'm going to have to clean up my Facebook, because I got a couple bad reviews I need to even out. Because, you know, and one thing I did learn, only thing I don't like about Facebook, people only leave reviews if they've had a bad experience. If they had a good experience, they rarely leave a review on Facebook unless you ask friends to do it. A friend of the show, her page just got thrashed by a company that, you know, they didn't.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. A friend of ours, her page got thrashed by a company because they sent her an invoice on some work they didn't do and she wouldn't pay it. And they trashed all her review pages. So yeah, that's just what Facebook is. You have to kind of get used to that, but got to kind of even it out.
Mm.
Yeah.
Them ghetto people hold a grudge, man.
Man. to get a lot of content, I would definitely say do reels. Reels really help on the content for like even your properties, reels around town. I think Bart came on and told us about that, doing like reels over the area. But I'm really need to change my social media strategy since I'm going more towards midterm. Because right now, if you look at my page, it looks very touristy, vacation rental type person. And I'm like, I don't want to be in that, you know, unless I was in a vacation rental market. So I do need to change that up.
Mm. You know, speaking of social media, because I have a buddy, he sends me these things. And it's funny to me because like there's so much inspirational quotes and stuff on IG. You know, mm-hmm. I guess Facebook too. I don't know, but he sends me these ones from IG, because that's what most people are on, is IG. And one, here's two that piss me off, and it might sound like sound advice, but one of them that I read, and this is what people are looking at, people are liking and loving and like sharing and all this shit. One of them was about saying, "Don't quit your job unless you know." And it has, and you scroll right and you see all the things that it says, right? Unless you have. You can make double your salary on passive income. You can do this. You can get your, it started naming all these conditions before you even need to consider quitting your job. Right. And okay. It might sound like sound advice. It might sound like, you know, conventional wisdom, but the problem to the me with the problem with that one is it sounds like it's going to keep a lot of people from making a leap and taking a risk. You know what I'm saying? The risk is risk. I mean, you can't have everything perfect lined up 100% and okay, now I can do it. You know what I'm saying? That's what, like, if you look at all the, you know, Elon Musk, Steve Jobs, Bezos, they took big ass risk, right? They took a risk and said, I believe in myself. I believe in my company. I believe I can do this. And they didn't say, oh, well let me get this lined up. Let me get this lined up. No, they fucking jumped in. And so many successful people did that, right? And I just hate like that one. I don't know why I'm talking about a meme that pissed me off, but I just like, I see what they're going with it, you know? But I just like, man, some people do need to take the leap. Some people do need to jump into this great idea that they got and go in 100% and not halfway and still have, oh, I'm going to keep my security and do this. I'm going to do both. I'm going to be successful at it. And I don't know. That one just rubbed me the wrong way. That's one of them.
I say it depends on your life circumstances to me. Because you can't say I'm going to go all in on this and you got kids at home. You know what I'm saying? And you're not in that right space. Financially, me personally, this is how I feel about it. Just hire a damn mentor or a coach. Like, we literally just sent a deal to title after we hired a real estate coach who is under our mentor. That's simply what it is. Now get off the memes. Just hire a coach. A coach will 10x where you want to be. You know, so it's just a lot that I tell people before you quit your job, hire a damn coach. That's what I would say. Hire a coach, a mentor who's where you're at. And then that's the easiest path to go down because they've been in your shoes, you know, because the meme thing, I understand it. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's good advice, bad advice, you know, but just hire a coach, man. Find somebody who's where you're at, where you want to be, and go for it, you know, and hire them. And man, it's like crazy. Once we got our coach, shout out to Scotty T. Once we got our coach, it was easy. You know, he was like, hey, do this for the next 30 days. I guarantee you get a result if you do this. And it worked, you know. Mahogany, she's out looking at a house right now. Just don't follow that advice. And we sent a house, wired money today to go onto escrow for another one. So it's like, you just have to hire somebody and then you can get to where you want to be. But as far as leaving your job, you just need a coach, man. That's how I look at it. Especially in today's weather, you can't, especially like us, like using like, and a lot of people use like the Elon Musk and everyone as examples. I'm like, what industry are they in? With real estate, it's a different industry. You got to know, okay, can I afford a DSCR loan right now? Can you afford 12%? You can't? You probably don't want to quit your job. Can you, you know, what interest rates are you going to get? If you're in just the arbitrage space, can you handle a bunch of bad months? Can you handle increased rents? You know, you got to look at all that. That all comes into play. So hire someone who's in the industry you're in and just go for it. That's how I look at it.
That's good advice. Sure. Yeah, if you want to be the best athlete in the world, you have to have a coach, right?
Straight up, man. Look at how many people are kicking ass after they train with Kobe, the Kawhis, the Jason Tatums. They're kicking ass. They, hey, Kobe, can I come train with you? Yeah, come on. They're kicking ass now. Straight up.
And another one, you know, I may be being called this segment, you know, memes that rub Steve the wrong way. Because I just hate bad advice out there, man. I just hate. Yeah, it can be crippling to people that just, oh man, I want to do this. Well, fucking do it, man. You know, nothing's ever going to be perfect, right?
Yeah.
Anyways, the next one, I saw this meme that someone sent me that's saying, okay, you know what? It says, take all your lunch breaks, take all your days off, take all your holidays, take all your comp time, because you agreed to this job for conditions. You didn't agree to this job to sell your soul. Now, okay, that sounds fine and good and all that, whatever. It sounds great on paper. Yeah, okay, yeah. If you want to work till 65 or 70 now or whatever they change the age to when we're old enough to 80. So that sounds all fine and good on paper. But I'm looking at deeper. I'm like, okay. What if this motherfucker, like the Bigger Pockets guy, you know, the guy that's on there now, I forgot his name. Anyways, he busted his ass. He worked about, he picked up everybody's shifts. He didn't take breaks. He did this and that, helped everybody else with their, you know, just talking about was busting tables and shit. He helped everybody else with their tables. He was going above and beyond because he had a goal. He wanted to make this amount of money. He wanted to go buy his first rental property. He wanted to get ahead in this whatever these business, you know, the restaurant or whatever these businesses or being a police officer. Well, I forgot his name, but anyways,
David Green.
David Green. His goal was to be the absolute best and not, you know, oh, I'm just gonna sit back. Hey, fuck it, I'm on my break. I ain't gonna help you, you know. But his mental state was, I'm gonna be the best. And they can't ignore me. And I'm going to get these promotions and raises. I'm going to spend all, save all this money. And I'm going to fucking buy rental property. You know, he had a goal, you know? And so telling somebody, no, fuck that company. Sit back. Don't go above and beyond. Just take all, you know, take all the time. You take sweet. Just be a average fucking employee or below average employee. And just do that the rest of your life. Because you don't know them shit. First of all, it could backfire. They could be like, I gotta keep like two of you guys. All right, the shitty workers, y'all are gone. But I don't know that. But it's just saying, you know, be complacent, and that's the message I didn't like about that meme. You know. Mm-hmm. Anyways, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I understand it, man. Because you have to. I mean, memes. I mean. Honestly, the people who are serious about where they want to go in life ain't taking advice from memes. I mean, you may want to consider cutting off the people who are sending you this shit.
It gives me a pulse on what people are looking at. I know, and I laugh at these things. I'm like, really? This is okay, man. All right, send me some social justice ones while you're at it.
Oh, shit, man. Seriously, man. You might want to reconsider who has your phone number. Oh, man, bro. Nah, but yeah, some people, yeah, memes, I'm just like, some of them are good, some bad. I understand what people are doing, you know. I'm actually about to make a, what's it called, meme? One of those scrolling ones here soon. But yeah, man, yeah. Memes are hilarious.
I guess to my point is if you're staring at IG all day, then you ain't out there doing it. You're just looking at all these info. You could read inspirational shit all day. It ain't going to do nothing for you. It ain't going to go out there and close deals for you.
Nope. You got to go do it, man. You got to go do it. You know, and I tell people, like, and my thing with the 9-to-5 is this. If you, like, and I was, you know, I'm back on the 9-to-5. One thing I do notice is sometimes there's people who are miserable, right? And like, and I know, I'm not going to say I'm above average. I'm going to say how I look at things may be a little bit different, but I look at it, if you're on a 9-to-5, you've assigned paperwork to be there 8 hours a day. Why are you there miserable? Like with anyone who says they hate their job, then quit. That's my whole thing. Don't sit around miserable, moping, then quit. Choose something else. I mean, they don't have a gun to your head. You know what I'm saying? You can quit. You know, that's my whole thing. Because if you signed up for 8 hours a day, go ahead, do it. Be happy. You know, and one thing, good thing, and this is one thing I do tell young people. If you're young and you're trying to get into real estate and you do have a 9-to-5, find a 9-to-5 with good management, good hierarchy, because then you can take that and put it into your own business. Because you want to be on 9-to-5 to not only be a value to a company, but also learn what they learn their hierarchy, how they hold meetings, because you can take all of that to your own company. That's what people miss on 9-to-5s. And that's in, I think Robert Kiyosaki talks about that in Rich Dad Poor Dad. Like if you're on 9-to-5, it's to learn. You're getting paid to learn. That's what you can do, you know, because everything on my 9-to-5, I've learned, implemented certain things, you know, shit, like a lot of these 9-to-5 jobs, I'm in the IT space. They're getting into AI. I'm about to learn it, you know? So it's a lot of stuff that you can just really learn from a 9-to-5, but chase good management. Don't chase money. Get good management.
Mm. I like that. I like that. Speaking of AI, I had a nightmare last night. And it was a fucking nightmare, dude. So I was on this. Okay. So I work for an airline still, technically, right? And so we fly what you call standby. Whenever there's a seat on the plane, we get on. We fly for free if we get on, if there's a seat, extra seats. So our airline was rolling out a new thing called it said, okay, all these trips out of Mexico are full, but we're starting this new program. It's like an AI flown airplanes. There's no pilots, nothing. AI is going to fly this airplane. So you want to be one of the first ones on there. And we're like, okay, it's going to get us back home. That's fine. We'll do it, you know? And we got to sit in the cockpit, which the cockpit was just like open, just some seating up there. There was no controls, nothing. Like I said, AI is flying the damn plane. We're not flying it. And there's no pilots. So we got to sit in the and see the front, you know, see out the front of the window. Wow, this is pretty freaking cool. Anyways, there's a bad thunder lightning storm happening, right? And I said, like, we're just sitting there waiting to take off. It's me, my wife and kids. And we're like, yeah, we're probably not going to leave, right? We're probably not going to. We're going to take off because it's pretty bad out there. Nope. Plane started up. We started going right into the storm. I was like, holy shit. And I guess AI thinks it's safe to fly. And so we take off. And of course, it's all freaking going sideways, left and upside and shaking. And then we go shoot. And then it shoots straight up into the sky, man. And it's like shaking. It's all like, holy crap, we're gonna die. And then it like levels off, but then it like it's real shaky still, right? And it like the plane almost goes upside down, like Denzel Washington when he was flying the airplane. You know, it was like, what the hell's happening, man? And then it tried to land on the freeway. It's doing all this crazy shit, right? And then finally we get back to the airport. I don't know how we got back, because you know, your dreams, you kind of just, you know, it just goes to the next part of the dream. It scared the shit out of me. But to me, it was an AI nightmare, because like I guess AI did all the mathematical shit and said, okay, well, most people don't die in thunderstorms, so we're going to take off anyways. Where a real human pilot said, no, fuck this, we're not going. But so there's my AI nightmare. I don't know what that had to do with anything short term.
I wrote that in the show notes, Steve's AI nightmare. And remember, by the way, you know, pilots really only do this landing and taking off, right?
Hey, they're there for emergencies, yeah, man. I'm just saying, man. They're there for emergencies. AI.
They make their sleep till they get something. Time to go.
Oh, man, that's funny. Let those cartoons where the robot pilot jumps, gets out of the airplane with a parachute. Oh, sorry, you're on your own.
Oh, man, that was that Family Matters episode when Steve and Carl had to land the plane. The pilot jumped out. Oh, man. Yes, good stuff, man. But yeah, man, we got a good episode in the bag. We talked about Section 8, owner financing, these high-ass interest rates, midterm rentals, list your stuff on Zillow, man, and understanding the cultures of VAs and Steve's AI nightmare, man.
Oh, little victories. We celebrate little victories, right? Yeah. I got a house. I just bought this house that we live in a few years ago. 3% down, you know, we do the house hacking thing, right? And I just got hit up Wells Fargo and got the PMI removed because I hit that threshold, because it's already gone from, so I bought the house for 250, right? Big house, swimming pool, big yard. I mean, back then, this is a few years back, you can get good deals still.
Yeah.
At 3% interest rate and shit. And now in just a few years, it's already on paper. Worth $365,000.
Let's go.
Just a few short years. So you hit that. Yeah. So go out, the listeners, you're in a house, you're paying PMI, go to your bank and get the
PMI removed.
Go to PMI removal and get it reappraised.
It costs
like $300 or $400, but
I'll do it.
It drops your PMI if you only put 3% down, or some people put 10%, whatever. Just appreciation itself is a PMI killer. So that's why if you're buying your own house, I'm never for putting 20% down on my own property. 3%. Keep that money and invest it in something else.
Straight up. Well, back then, now you might want to put down more than 3%. Just basically kick your ass. No. Well, it depends.
I'm still against
it. If you're moving into it, I guess you could still put 3% down. Just if your income can afford it. Because, yeah, if you paying 3% on a $280,000 loan, 30-year note at 8%, whew. Man, in Texas, rising interest rates, man. Oh, before we end the show, how are you combating the rising interest rates on new pickups?
New pickups? What do you mean?
Like if you're buying a new property.
Well, let me see. The last one we bought, we got it right around 6%. It was still a pretty decent percentage, I guess, for the house that we bought. You know, it was still kept the price pretty low. But as far, we haven't picked up any since it's gone. Now it'll be over 7 or maybe 8, because if it's an investor property, it'd be more like close to 8%.
Yeah.
So I haven't. You could ask Fetty. He's out there home shopping right now for him and his wife. So you can ask him how they're gonna.
I just asked him, it's my box, man. We got something for sale right now in Fort Worth.
Oh, really?
Yeah, man. I just told you. We just put the escrow on stuff. That's all I was asking him. I'm like, bro, we got houses. We're moving and doing, but he hit me back.
Yeah, yeah. He wanted a pool. They really want a swimming pool.
Yeah. Could this one have? No, this one I got. But I will tell people, just do your due diligence right now when buying, because with that new Biden rule, I do think we'll see the effects of it in a year, and that starts May 1st.
Okay, explain that rule to me one more time.
So if you have good credit, your house payment can go up. I think it's if you have good credit and you're buying a house, you might be paying a little bit more for your payment every month to subsidize for those who can't really, who have bad credit. Basically, remember back in the day in 07, 08, they give everybody what a pulse alone. So to circumvent just fully messing up the market, you people with good credit pay for the people with bad credit.
Mm.
So that goes into effect May 1st. We don't, and this is what I always say, I think the government has good intentions and we run into long-term effects of things, like with the whole COVID thing. We wanted to keep businesses afloat. We wanted to give people money, but what comes with that? Inflation.
Inflation. Yeah.
So, you know, you
trillions without something happening.
So I think what's going to happen in a year, we're going to see the effects of that. I don't know the effects. The effects I could see is less home ownership. That's the only effect I could see. Cause like right now people can barely afford with these interest rates. Now you have this new rule in place. So, you know, so I tell people be very, do your due diligence when you're buying right now.
I figured it out. You know how people would get on trade lines, which means getting on people's credit cards and stuff to boost their credit rate, right?
Yeah,
go to your homies.
We're talking about tanking his credit rate. I'm like, I don't think it's going to help
you. You saw where I was going with that.
That was the first thing you said. Oh, he goes, oh, I know how to tank my credit score. I was like, I don't know if that'll help you. See, but, and this is another thing I don't understand about it. Is it for people, the new pickups, or for the people that already own? You see what I'm saying? That's why I don't know. So I don't know this whole Biden shit that's going on, but I don't know.
Professors say that everything the government touches turns to shit.
I mean, some of it turns to shit. Some of it turns to gold. It just depends on
what side of the aisle you're for sitting. Them. Yeah, for them, it's gold.
I mean, it just depends on what side of the aisle you're sitting on. And I tell people this all the time. You know, you got to just, you got to know the rules of the game. No rules of the game. That's all it is, man. But this one, I don't know the effects, but I've heard three people complain about it so far. So I know people are looking at it from different angles. Mm. I understand what they're trying to do. I think they have good intentions, but I think it's just going to have a fucked up result.
We'll see, man. Right. They don't have a good track record, so we'll see. All right. Thank you all for listening. Where can people find us, Mike?
Find us on Instagram at Live Let Thrive, TikTok at Live Let Thrive. Send us an email. Make sure to subscribe. Hit that subscribe button below. Leave us a review. And thank y'all for continuing to listen to us. And you can pick up the replay of our midterm rental masterclass, which is in our link tree. Make sure to click that, get that replay, and learn some good stuff on midterm rentals and operations. And thank y'all for continuing to listen to us. We are out. Peace. Later.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Live, Let, Thrive. Be sure to tune in next week for all the latest in the world of Airbnb and all that entails. Bye-bye.